Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're joining us from. Welcome to the School of Mary Live Cenacle Series, and this is Crossing the Exiled Series, where we take a look at this journey and how vital it is each and every day, not just getting to the end-all purpose, which is to bring us back to the order of the place and the purpose for which we're created by God, actually to utilize every single day at every moment, similar to the wants, I guess, if you want to call it a want, that the souls of purgatory had expressed through approved mystics. They had said that one of the regrets, if they could have a regret, would be that they didn't make better use of the time while still on earth. And that's something that we can all use as advice, strong advice. And we're so blessed. We have all these things that have gone before us, 6,000 years of all this this grace that's being poured out on each and every one of us. And poor Adam and Eve, they had no one that went before them that either fell or succeeded, so they really couldn't gauge. They didn't have that that blessing that we have, so that's why we're in a much better position. So that being said, first I'm going to bring in Maureen. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, Peter. Hi, everybody. Good to be here.
That's so nice to have you. I'd like to start a little differently this evening, if I may. And this is just a two paragraphs, actually, from The Son of My Will. This is the biography of Luisa Picaretta, which was published by the Vatican Publishing Company, I think back in 2015. It's on page 94, and it's entitled Accepting the Plan of Salvation, which, again, I think some people will have issue with. Maybe we have some doubts along the way, but we shouldn't. So this is Accepting the Plan of Salvation. Quote, in light of these things, let us look at what makes the life of a woman like Luisa, who suffers differently from the many other women scattered around the whole world. Let us try to see if her experience can inspire others to open their arms as to not to rebel against a plan that is not grasped on an intellectual level and that escapes people who are bogged down asking why. The late Henri Bergson, a French philosopher, said that the words of mystics reawaken the mystical life that slumbers in each human being. End quote. So that's what's happening. We have that mystical life. It's been asleep. It's been dormant. It's been placed on pause. And now God is saying, I'm activating. I'm reactivating. But again, it takes us to say yes, fiat. Wouldn't you agree, Maureen?
Oh, yeah. I love the mystics. Always did. I always felt like it helped my faith. You know, and when Luisa came along, I said, wow, she's the mystic of all mystics.
Right, and we're talking about mystics that are approved by the Holy Church. We're not talking about in general everything, because there's some that are lacking certain elements, but these are approved mystics that really have helped us along. I mean, everything is helping us along. Everyone in heaven is helping us. There's like we've got like zillions and trillions of cheerleaders just cheering us on, yeah. Just saying, "Come on, do it one step at a time, one act at a time." That's what's so great. And this journey in the exile, you know, crossing the exile, excuse me, which in of itself is just so extraordinary, because Jesus says, I take more delight in those journeying on earth than I do with the blessed in heaven. And he gives an example that, you know, the blessed in heaven, yeah, I don't want this to sound harsh, but I mean, they're living in the divine will, basically, because they're living in the divine will. They're right in front of Jesus. They sort of have to. We have a choice here. We can say yes, fiat, or we can say no, thanks. So he takes greater joy. And ours comes with trials and tribulations and all kinds of obstacles and challenges. And again, God waits for our, not necessarily our reaction, but I think he's waiting for a calculated response. And I think we have everything to have that dose of humility. You know, when he tells us, I forget what volume it is, he says the main ingredient in humility is confidence. Now, when I first heard that, Maria, I thought of like a paradox. Confidence, and I'm thinking overconfidence, but not overconfidence. If you're confident about something, you don't have to go around, you know, shouting about it, beating your chest, trying to prove it all the time. You know that it's true. And you have that sort of peace that goes with it, because people, I think, will resonate and listen more attentively to those who have more of a peaceful disposition. And again, I think this, again, that doesn't mean every day is going to be, you know, gravy. We're going to have challenges, but there's no such thing as a bad day. But again, being on Earth, some days will indeed be better than others. So crossing the exile, I'm excited. I think God has given us everything that we needed. I know we do this often, but again, I think the more we hear it, I think the more it's going to resonate. I think every time we repeat it, God gives us a little bit more, a little more salt, a little more pepper, a little more flavoring. So I think that we understand it better. So could we take this small passage, a small excerpt from the passage from volume 17, October 23rd, 1924, the one that's underlined. Mm-hmm. I'll bring out the pointer, Maureen, so
okay.
I can keep up with you because I have difficulty.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. And Jesus again, "My daughter, you do not know what my will on earth is. It shows that after so many of my lessons, you have not understood well. You must know that the soul who here lets my will live within her, as she prays, as she suffers, as she works, as she loves, etc., forms a sweet enchantment to the divine pupils in such a way as to enclose with her acts the gaze of God in that enchantment. And so the Omnipotent One, taken by the sweetness of this enchantment, feels disarmed of many chastisements which the creatures draw upon themselves with their grave sins. This enchantment has the virtue of preventing my justice from pouring out with all its fury upon the face of the earth, because my justice too remains enchanted by my will operating in the creature. Do you think it is trivial that the Creator sees in the creatures who are still living upon earth his divine will operating, triumphant, ruling, with the same freedom with which it operates and rules in heaven? However, this enchantment in heaven is opposite, because my will dominates in its kingdom as if in its own house, and the enchantment is formed within myself, not outside of me. Therefore, it is my will that enchants all the blessed with an enrapturing power in such a way that their pupils are enclosed in my enchantment to be eternally beatified. So it is not they who form the sweet enchantment for me, but I for them. And so my pupils are free and receive no charm."
And we took that sort of silly analogy, but it makes a little sense to me. And you know, he talks about in my house, dominates in my house. You know, think about children being raised by parents, and the parents try to do the best they can. You know, they pray grace before meals, they say the rosary, they go to church on Sunday. And if you're living in the house of your parents, you sort of kind of have to do this. I mean, you probably do it voluntarily, but you have to do it. And that's comforting, but when the children get to the age where they go out on their own and they have their own homes, and when then the parents go to visit them, when they recognize and observe them saying grace before meal, bring the rosary in the evening, going to church on Sunday, doing it voluntarily, doing it on their own volition in their house, it's more enchanting. It's more satisfying. It knows that what you've done has taken root somewhere. So I can understand that. Really, really well about what he's saying here. Any thoughts on that? I think you're muted, Maureen.
Oh, okay. I was saying, okay. I you said exactly what I was thinking. So
I should have let you speak first. Then.
Yeah.
Right, next time I'll let you speak first. I took your thunder.
That's all right.
Well, you know, speaking of thunder, that's another thing too. That's another great quote I came across. Oh gosh, I don't have it here. It was by Ronald Reagan. He said something like, "What marvelous things we can do if we care less, basically, who gets the credit for it." It's a great quote. And that's all we need. We just need to keep throttling forward, you know, going through this and not looking around. What is he doing? What's she doing? You know, it's like anyone running a race, a real race, like in a marathon. It's like, very little do they, especially at the sprints, do they look around and see how everyone's doing. They just do the best they can. And that's what this race is not really who wins the race by coming in first. This race is just a matter of finishing it. It doesn't matter if we come in last place or first place. As long as we finish the race, we're getting the same promises that that God's given us with this, the epitome, I think, of just pure hope, which is wonderful. But I had one other thing. This may not have time for this, but I'd like to, if I could. This is all red somewhere here. I've got to do something about cutting this down so I don't have to keep strolling and get everyone dizzy. We talked about here, we talked about we're going to come under attack. That is point blank, it's going to happen. In fact, I remember meeting Father Nuzzi for the first time in 2015 when I picked him up at the airport. He said, Pete, buckle your seatbelts. Basically, it's going to be the greatest ride you've ever had, the grace that's going to be received. He says, but you're going to be attacked like nothing before. And that goes for all of us. And usually the attack comes from within what hurts us the most, which is usually the family. You'll see some division, there. So just stay steadfast. Try to be the peacemaker as best you can. I know it's difficult sometimes, but yeah, I think that works. So again, I don't think we have to go over that. I would like to just read this last sentence before we journey into our new material for today, Maureen, please.
What do you want to make of me? And he answered, I want to make of you an object of my satisfaction. And in the very act of saying these words, he disappeared, and I found myself inside myself.
Yeah, the object, and again, I think that object of my satisfactions goes back to that silly analogy about, when we go to the children's house, we're very satisfied to know that what we did has again taken some root. So we want to do the same to our blessed Lord. And then he says he disappeared. I found myself inside myself. Again, he loved allowing Louisa to experience this privation. I think that's going to be for next week. Is a passage on privation, where he basically was, it was just like a this constant test. He would go away, come back, and again, Louisa's whole life was our Lord. So whenever he wasn't there, she, as she said, I feel like I'm not alive. But he was building in her the confidence and the wherewithal to understand that he's always with her. He's always with us, whether we see him or not. But he also used that privation and he uses crosses in our worlds for another purpose also. Remember, he states that we all have a certain number of acts that we all must perform and do and complete before we can pass from this world. There are also voids. Remember, there's two voids: the void, the good void that God gave us in the soul to house Him. That's good. That's, we keep adding to that. But then there's the second void, which are those missed opportunities along our lives where we failed to give gratitude, to give recognition, honor, and glory to God on the level of God, due to God. Those voids, he says, must be filled completely before we can enter heaven. So what he's doing is he's allowing through these privations, through these crosses, to, as he puts it, redouble the love for us. Thus, to fill these voids more quickly. And hopefully, again, if we're living this gift perfectly, completely, he says that these voids will be filled and there will not be a need for purgatory. So hence, we will bypass purgatory. So again, these promises are there. It does take work, but I think it takes more trust than it does work, Maureen, because if you think about it, he's really left little work for us to do physically, mentally, and spiritual. It's mostly just trusting him and then sort of not going against the grain here, so to speak. He's the author. When Adam first words were like, my God, the author of my life. Again, he's written our books, but he loves us so much, he's given us editing capabilities. But anytime I've tried to edit my book, I destroyed myself and I fall into a hole. So I think the best ammunition I can say here is allow God's book to be as God wrote it, because the way God wrote it is we are with him forever. And if we just stick to the script, I think we'll be much better off. I
I
know.
think
I don't know.
there's a reason why he said what he said about divine mercy being the last devotion
That's right.
before his glory, so that there's a reason. That's how God speaks to us. He does something unbelievable and then he says, did you see what I just did? There's a reason.
Yeah.
There's a reason why divine mercy, Jesus, I trust in you, is the last great motto that we heard before we all really start learning about. I mean, for me, the divine will kind of took off after divine mercy, I think, you know, in the countries.
Yeah, and think about how tied it is to divine mercy too. I mean, that quote, "Jesus, I trust in you," was so, he knew it was going to be so necessary, because these things are so extraordinary, these gifts of the divine will, that, you know, they're almost sometimes difficult to fathom or to believe. So he just kept saying, "Jesus, I trust in you." That's what we have to keep saying. Oh, I don't know how you're going to do this, Jesus, but I know that if you said it's going to be done, it's going to be done, and I don't have to worry about it. And also, you know, think also about how tied the divine mercy and the divine will is. On our website, queenofthedivinewill.org, there's actually a page, Divine Mercy and the Divine Will. And you see the correlation of some of the passages. I mean, just look at the first Divine Mercy Sunday, instituted by Pope John Paul II, fell on Luisa's birthday, number one. Number two, remember what the priest said every time he came to awaken her? Holy God, Holy Mighty One, Holy Mortal One. Again, the same thing said in the Divine Mercy chaplet. So it's just really astonishing, the correlation. And also, if you want to go even to the MMP, the Marian Movement of Priests, go to that page on the website, and you'll see dozens and dozens of quotes of our Blessed Lady to Father Gobi. "I have come only to do the divine will." I mean, it's all divine will. Even Father Gobi on the front page, I don't know if it's still there, but the front page of the website, the Marian Movement of Priests, he talks about Luisa. And he says, this era peace, this Eucharistic reign of Jesus, this triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, he says, all of this will not occur until everyone's living in the divine will. So he was very, again, he was in tune to the best of where God wanted to give to him. Yet he had this beautiful, beautiful series of locutions. And I think it's one of the largest paternal groups. I think the Marian Movement of Priests, I think couple hundred thousand worldwide. So again, it's all here. Like Maureen said, Jesus, I trust in you. So that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to begin with this quote here in purple.
Okay. November 21st, 1899, volume 3. Jesus delights in Luisa, who is helped by the Most Holy Virgin. This morning, as soon as he came, my most beloved Jesus told me, "My daughter, all your pleasure must be in reflecting yourself in me. If you do this always, you will portray all of my qualities, my physiognomy, and my very features within you. And I, in return, will find all my taste and highest contentment in delighting in you by reflecting myself in you." After he disappeared, and I was meditating in my mind on the words he had just told me, all of a sudden he came back, placing his holy hand on my head and turning my face toward him. He added, "Today I want to delight a little bit by reflecting myself in you."
That's so beautiful. I mean, how many times have we heard through our lives, either in homilies or talks, that we must be a mirror of Christ, right? We must reflect. You know, we're shadows, but yet we're mirrors. And again, it's all here. It's all here. And then, of course, he says, you know, so all of a sudden, you know, he came back. He went. He loves this because, again, he knew it was he wasn't trying to frustrate, I don't think, Luisa intentionally, but he was trying to build her virtues. Because, again, how do we exercise our virtues? We need situations. You know, we need somebody to cut us off in the church parking lot after Mass, to be able to be composed and not to do anything bad, and just say, "Lord, forgive me. He knows not what he does. He just cut me off. Maybe he's having a difficult day. Maybe he's engrossed in some thought." You know, so we need those situations, and God says they'll always be there for us. And again, I think each and every one of us can give a handful that happened probably in the last couple hours. But anyway, but seriously, but again, yeah. It's going to happen. And again, that's why, again, hence he takes more pleasure in those souls journeying, because again, the souls in heaven don't have this. They don't have these obstacles. Yeah. And again, these obstacles are all over the place. And in fact, if you want to go to the, again, another page on the website called the Divine Will Visual Aids, there's two PowerPoint presentations showing some of the obstacles. I mean, some of them are obviously very obvious of what we know. But some of them are actually obstacles that, you know, don't appear so bad, but we have to be just careful Again, this is delicate time. You know, there's a battle raging for our soul, and Satan is like that dog cornered. Is going to do everything possible. Knows he can't win. I mean, really, intellectually, but is trying to take as many souls away from God in this final battle. But God's giving us everything we need. So I just thought that was beautiful. So again, all your pleasure must be in reflecting yourself in me. Ambassadors of Christ, a mirror of God, taking what he gives us. It really, that's the reciprocal of love, right? The divine will, God gives his love on his level. We take his love on his level and give it back to him on the level due to him, owed to him. So again, it's all here. And he spells it out. I love it because he spells the same message out in a myriad of different ways so we can all get it. Similar to like when he spoke in parables. And by the way, I have to find that passage. Jesus actually articulates why he spoke to souls in a particular way throughout the course of history. And he talks about why he spoke in parables. It just really is fascinating. I have to find that. If someone knows what passage it is, please put it in the chat board. But it's there somewhere. He explains his the process and behind what he did and why he did it at that time for those souls at that time. So I just think it's great. Anything else on that, Maureen?
No.
Okay.
Okay. A shiver ran through my whole neck back, such a fright as to feel I was dying, because I saw that he was staring at me, wanting to delight in my thoughts, gazes, words, and in all the rest by reflecting himself in me. I kept repeating in my interior, "Oh God, am I an object fit for letting you take delight? Or for embittering you." In the meantime, our dear Queen Mama came to my help, carrying a pure white garment in her hands, and all loving, she told me, "Daughter, do not fear. I myself want to make up for you by clothing you with my innocence, so that in reflecting himself in you, my son may find the greatest delight that can be found in a human creature." Mother
That's Our
comes
Lady.
to the rescue.
That's Our Lady. I mean, is that incredible? I mean, we've talked about this too, that every time that Jesus closes the door in heaven, his mother opens up a window somewhere. So I mean, she's a mother. And what does our church say? One of the things our church says in the Catholic Catechism, Article 507, just a snippet here, it says, quote, "At once Mary is the symbol and the most perfect realization of the church," end quote. So how can we not emulate the perfect symbol and the perfect realization of the church? That's Our Lady. And she did it in the first Pentecost. She's going to do it again the second Pentecost. They'll be gathering around spiritually. And Our Lady's going to be teaching all that was taught to her, all that was given to her. And what is it? It's just bring us right back to the Son. That lady brings us to the Son brings us to the Father. That's the chain of command. That's the way it operates. And we have everything. We have everything we need. That's the hope that's really here. No matter what's going on out there. I mean, there's nutty stuff going on, but that's okay. I mean, we pray. I mean, sometimes we chuckle. We pray for all those who are disturbed. And again, because we've been there, we may be there again, maybe tomorrow. Hopefully not. But we just want to keep hopefully responding to God's grace and not reacting. And speaking of grace, this one thing I try to remember, never outpray. Well, we know grace anticipates the soul. We know God will give us the grace necessary at the time we need it. But I always think to myself, never outpace grace. So, stay in your lane. When cars are going in the highway, there's really usually no problem at all until they start changing lanes and getting crazy. That's when the risk of hitting someone. So if we stay in our lane, we've all been given an office. There's no office that's greater. I mean, maybe well, Luis's is, but oh, we're all in the same boat. We're all in this huge symphony, and we're all playing an instrument. Some instruments are heard more loudly than others, but if that's missing, the symphony is incomplete. We're all a piece of a puzzle. If one of us is not there, the puzzle is incomplete, as beautiful as it may be. So we're all called to an office, and I think that's so beautiful. But yeah, I try to stay in my lane. I know I get in trouble when I go out of my lane, so I'm pretty. My wife helps keep me in my lane, actually. I veer out. I do. I veer out all the time, but she helps me get back. which is at the time I don't think it's such a great thing, but I when I reflect back, I say, well, thank you for doing that.
I think divine will helps us to be more patient, because some of us who are doers realize that some of the things you've done in the past were for your own glory or for your own feeling good or whatever. And when you're in the divine will, you're trying to live in the divine will. It's all about what God wants. And so you hesitate, you kind of wait and see what his plan is. And it makes you sit back a little and not be such a mover and a shaker, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean? You just say, well, let me wait on this. Let me pray and see what the Lord wants me to do. I know for me, it's helped me just to relax a little bit and not be such a doer, but maybe just learn how to be. And there's power in that when you're praying in the divine will or breathing in the divine will or eating in the divine will. You could do so much more for the world. It's great. I mean, it's just when you think about it, you know, people that are doers, you could do more breathing in the divine will. Or batting your eyelashes, as Jesus says. It's a whole new way of thinking.
Yeah, you're right. And that I don't remember as often as I should do. It's a paradigm shift. If you think about it, go back to the saints. The saints became saints mostly for what they did. He did this, she did that. So they did something and they became this. God says, now I want to change everything. I want to turn everything upside down. I don't want you to do right now. I want you to be first. I want you to be first. Come under the umbrella of the divine will, then go back out and do what you're doing. And that's, I think, what he explains when he says, give up even holy things. And I have it somewhere here, but I probably can't get it. But he says, you know, give up holy things to embrace this gift and then go out. It's like snorkeling and you're running out of oxygen. Someone hands you an oxygen, a tank, an air tank. You have to call time out and get refreshed first. So I think that's what he's saying. He says, be first, then go out and do. And if you think about it, that's a lot easier than what the saints did. The saints actually had to work a lot harder than we did. And I think hence that's St. Louis de Montfort when he says the greatest of all saints will be at the end times where we are now, not because we're better people, but we've been given better gifts to work with. You know, we talked about the silly analogy too. You know, back then, build a house, give a couple of pieces of wood, a couple of nails, and you know, you can put up whatever you can, the best you can. You can have the greatest builder, but that's all he or she has to work with. Now you have cement mixers, you have bulldozers, you've got framers, you've got this. I mean, you can make a much better house today, not because you're more talented, but because you have better opportunity at what's been given to you. Again, hence the gift. This is the gift of gifts. It's not only the greatest gift that God has given to mankind, but as Father Anuzzi clarifies, he says it's the greatest gift that God can give to mankind. And there's a huge delineation there, because if it's the greatest gift he's given to mankind today, well, maybe there's something greater tomorrow. No, this is the greatest gift that he can give because he's giving all of himself. And there's nothing greater than that. So there's no more chasing butterflies. There's nothing we can aspire for. Hence, that's the heaven on earth. In heaven, they still have their free will, but they have nothing to aspire for because they have it all. God's giving us that same aura here on earth as it is in heaven, where we don't have to be chasing butterflies. It's nothing we need. We have everything we need. In fact, Jesus says, I've given you so much that you have not fully masticated on. You haven't fully understood. You haven't fully pondered. And I know I'm guilty of that. But again, we have everything. And all it takes is just slipping into his mansion through a crack, through a back door, through a window. It doesn't matter. You can come in through the hours of the Passion, the Virgin Mary, the Kingdom, the letters of Louisa, anywhere you can get in. In fact, someone asked the other day, where do I start? Whatever you're moved by. I mean, just like it's like God, when someone asked, I think it was Louisa, saying about, you know, how do I know if I'm doing your will? And he gave a great, simple analogy. He just said, well, when you're awake, don't try to sleep. And when you're sleeping, and when you're sleepy, don't try to be awake. So take what has been given and make the best of it. I think that's a great, great approach. How can we ever go wrong with that? I mean, really, you think about it. And I think your point, we don't have to be doing. We can do more with one act, one round of divine will, like you said, Maureen, even an insignificant blinking of the eye. And I think he gave us the greatest example. He told Louisa, sit there and look like you're doing, or lay there and look like you're doing nothing while you do everything. See, again, the opposite, he turned it all around. The Pharisees looked at it like they were doing everything, like they cared for everyone. And really, the love never permeated their heart for the most part. And now it's just the opposite. You're not outwardly doing anything, but inside, you're making the greatest difference on all of mankind. That's never been possible before, but possible to everyone right now. Jesus says, he says, I've made this easy and accessible to all. He says this in volume 11, September 25th, 1913. I had to make this gift of the divine will in such a way that sanctity might be easy and accessible to all unless they did not want it. This had to be easy and accessible in all conditions, all circumstances, and in every place. End quote. So it's not something that's hard to get to. It's coming right to us. It's a matter of, are we going to give our fiat? I think it just comes down to that. I mean, am I looking at it too simply, Maureen?
Well, I what just came to me was in volume one, the Trinity, Louise's, experiencing the Trinity in her. I mean, where do we see that anywhere? Like we see the Moses and he got the Ten Commandments and God was in a burning bush and he could hear the thunderous roar. And then we see Jesus come as a man and the Holy Spirit in his works and in the wind. Well, she had all three of them in her. I mean, that's unheard of. The Blessed Trinity, the indwelling of the Blessed Trinity inside of her. She could hear them talking. I mean, that right there, are there anything greater than that? Like he wants to make us a living host, not a host. Not even not putting down the host at the Eucharist, but
Right.
that's not alive. He wants to make us a living host. Just the thought of that, and it's just amazing. You don't read that anywhere.
No. And see,
That's not.
I think that's also part of the problem for some souls, not to be able to accept this because it just seems too good to be true. But again, Jesus is very clear. It really allows for our disposition. And we can use another word for disposition. We can say desire. Okay. And he tells us that opposite effects in volume 36, May 19th, 1938. He says, quote, so whoever will read these writings with the intention of finding the truth will find my flames and will be all transformed in love and will love me more. But whoever will read them to split hairs and find doubts will remain blinded and confused by my light and my love. My children, the goodness of my truths produces two opposite effects. For those who are disposed or have the desire, it is light giving sight to their intelligence and the life of sanctity contained in my truths. For those who are not disposed, who don't want this gift, basically, it is blindness that deprives them of the good contained in my truths. Thank you. I mean, he explains everything to us. We just have to sort of just asking for the grace to bring it back to us, to our recollection when we need it. Because again, six situations, they usually repeat themselves. I mean, we're talking about these exercises of our virtues. We're going to have people cutting us off. We're going to have people doing this. I mean, they're pretty repetitive and we have to get better at it, that's all. Because if it's not transforming us, then I don't think it's taking traction. And God wants to see traction. He wants to see a change. And I know how to make about face, and but I've got a long way to go. But that's okay. As long as we're on the right road, that's all that matters. He says, oh, that's another one too. I love this. I'm sorry, Maureen. I really a blabbermouth tonight, but it
No,
was
no.
crazy because some of this stuff came up in the radio program. How about this for comfort? Volume 23, February 28, 1928. He talks about each additional knowledge being a new creation that forms in creations in creatures, the happiness and the unreachable beauty that we all receive from it. And then he goes on to say, however, all those who have acquired these knowledges, whether in full or in part, will have the noble title of children of my kingdom. End quote.
That's good.
In part.
Yeah.
In part. 50%, 25%, 1%. Because again, our desire has gotten us
Desire.
where we're in the mansion. Now our work begins. Are we going to explore? Are we going to unveil things? Are we going to do this? That's where we have to exercise our work. We've done none of our work, whatever we have done or have not done, has done nothing for us to receive this gift. It's a gift given to us freely.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. But once it's given, that's when the work begins. And I think he tells us that as well.
When you read the volumes, you see and you feel, you begin to feel, like when I first start reading the volumes, I was reading them with my mind. And then I started to read them with my heart. And it made a huge difference. I wasn't feeling like I had to get everything. I had to understand everything. I wasn't getting that. I was just kind of like accepting all this love. Like it's all about his love. He's telling us a thousand different ways why and how he loves us. So he makes himself so approachable, and that you can't help but say, I want to join this club. I'm a sinner and I don't understand, but gosh, you love me so much, Jesus. You must think I can do this. You know, like he has more faith in us than we do ourselves, because he knows all. And he knows that this is a gift for all his children, regardless of your intelligence, where you're born,
Right.
who you are. That has nothing to do with it. It's for everyone.
It really is. And he says that often. Again, our desire, he says, I will give you commensurate to what you want. If you really want this gift, I'm going to give it to you. And but he does want us to be complete as we can, to masticate. He says that often, masticate. He says, actually, there's much I've given you already that you have not fully masticated. So it's hard for him to keep giving us if we're not swallowing it. It's like, you know, feeding an infant. You don't keep feeding the infant. You wait till the infant swallows. And that's, I think, part of the reason why the Vatican is having difficulty with these, quote, ambiguities. They're not able to make sense of it. And Father Inuzzi actually came across a couple of things that they could do better. I think he's actually coordinating and corresponding with the Vatican to tell him about this. I don't know how well that's going to be received. Well, it all comes down to, if it's God's will that this be rectified now, it's going to happen. If it's not God's will at this moment, nothing that Father Inuzzi, with all he can do, is going to make a difference. But what he says is, one of the errors that they're doing is they're taking just a little excerpt of a passage and they're trying to make total sense out of it without reading it completely. And again, Jesus answered this exactly. How many times, Maureen, have you heard there are no errors in these writings? Which is true, right? We hear it.
Right.
No errors. The theologian said no errors. No errors. No, there are no errors. But then you look at volume 3, January 8th, 1900, and you have the little caption, the blip before the passage. It states, quote, the errors contained in these writings, which will do good. He said, wait a minute. I hear from everyone, there are no errors. What Jesus saying there are errors? And this is what he says. I assure you, I'm going halfway down. I assure you that they will find not a shadow of vice or anything which is not a virtue. Because while you write, Louisa, I myself guide your hand. Here it is. At the most, they may find a few errors at first sight. But if they look at them more thoroughly, they will find the truth. End quote. So they're going to observe errors that are really not errors. They're just misunderstandings. And again, I think this goes to your point, Maureen. He said also the church is going to try to understand this intellectually with the human mind. It's impossible. This is a mystical gift, mystical grace, which is not like our baptismal graces. This is given by God to whomever wishes, whatever, to whatever extent he wishes. These are mystical graces and gifts that he's bestowing on us. And these are almost unexplainable. Well, let's go back to Pope Benedict. He gave a speech to the bishops. I don't have a date on it, but he said, listen to this, how divine will this is and how appropriate it's about, you know, can't explain everything. He says, quote, Pope Benedict, quote, God is wrapping up everything. 6,000 years of assistance through grace is now being organized and explained by God himself so as to define unequivocally truth. The truth and nothing but the truth, not through man. Man must realize he cannot explain everything. End quote. So if we don't understand this, it's okay. Remember, we just read, if we understand it in part, we're still children of the kingdom.
Yeah.
1%'s a part, 99% support, 1%'s a part, 0.5% support. Put in the door. It's all we need. Get out of the elements. It's just, again, easy and accessible for all.
I
All
think
places, all
that's
places.
where the humility has to come in, because this is heaven coming down to earth. So how can we expect to understand it, know it, and live it right away? We can't. We're from the low world. This is the low world where we live. No matter how highfalutin we think we are, we're in the low world, and this is heaven coming down. So it's going to take a while with our, and a lot of us have strong wills. That's what got us here. And so now Jesus says, all right, give it to me. So give up your will. So it's going to take some of us a little while longer, and that's okay. We're all different.
Yeah. And that humility is so vital. But Jesus also gives us something to think about also. He tells us, I'm paraphrasing, but he says basically the main ingredient in humility or the disposition of being humble is confidence. And when I first heard that, I said, what? That sounds like a paradox. But I was thinking overconfident. No, that's not what he's saying. Confidence will breed humility. We know that we know, and we know that we know that we know. It's like my college years. We used to hang out with some of my friends, and some of them are really big bodybuilders. I mean, these guys didn't have to be aggressive when they were walking down the boardwalk because they were confident that no one's going to, give them a hard time. And they didn't give that a hard time. So I think that confidence, knowing that we know that this gift is the greatest gift of all gifts that God can give us, is going to give us that confidence, enabling us to be humble. We're not going to be shouting every time somebody talks badly about the divine will and try to be, reactive. And that also brings me to that other quote. I don't know where I got this from. I clearly didn't write it, but it says, quote, "This kingdom of the divine will is so valuable that once you have glimpsed it, it's worth parting with everything you have in order to gain it. Even though to others, sometimes you may look like a fool. You know of the hidden treasure, and that makes it worth everything." And confidence in this being the gift of gifts. And trusting, like you said, Maureen, Jesus, I trust in you. Okay, do we have one more small here? Did we do this? No.
We did the Blessed
We did.
Mothers. Yeah. We
The
said
box
she
here? Oh, yeah, we
closed.
did that.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't remember.
Oh no, maybe we didn't. I don't remember Peter either.
I don't. Let's read this because I don't think we have time for
Okay.
this.
Okay.
And again, let's talk about the privation. I want to get some other quotes from other volumes about privation because it's so important. Again, Louise's privation, that was her cross. Our cross may be financial, maybe health, maybe something else. I mean, we all have crosses. So I think the privation and the benefit of privation and our response to it, again, will be the same regardless of what the element is, whatever the cross or vision is. So let's just, if we write it, let's read it again because I think it's good.
Okay. So she clothed me with that garment, and she offered me to my good, dear good Jesus, telling him, accept her out of regard for me, O dear son, and delight in her. So every fear went away from me, and Jesus delighted in me, and I in him. Oh, we didn't read that. That's so
We did, right?
beautiful.
Yeah, but it sounds like I didn't, like you didn't read it. But again, that's Our
That's
Lady.
she's
That
so
is Our
great.
Lady. So, another thing, another, I think, a hint is, I think whatever relationship we have with our Blessed Mother, I think we have to increase it a bit. We have to
Yeah,
up the ante. We have to,
definitely.
and I think the more we trust her also, again, that Jesus, I trust in you. And if we trust Jesus, well, we have to trust what he's given his mother to do, which is to gather the children for this kingdom. She's the one that's gathering them, marking them for her blessed son. So again, the more we get to know Our Lady, well, Jesus said too in the Virgin Mary of the Kingdom, I think it's meditation number six. If you want miracles and graces, go to my mother, for there's nothing I can deny her of when she has. There's nothing like that. I can never deny what she asks for. So go to Our Lady. Jesus said, can't say no. Can't say no to his mother. That's so beautiful.
Sure
Final
is.
thoughts, Maureen.
Well, the Jesus and Mary, like I was thinking the other day, they both lived here. They lived the I mean Mary was a human, but the Queen Mother of God who lived his humanity here. And so they both lived a life here on earth, which makes them totally get what we're going through. And it makes them so approachable. Even though they're God and the mother of God, they're so approachable. They lived a life on earth and experienced a lot of hardship. So it's easy to go to, it should be easy to go to them regardless of what we're going through, because they were part of the earth. They lived on the earth. They saw how hard it was. And just go to them. Don't think twice.
Yeah, I like that, because I was looking at the same thing we're all looking at, but through a slightly different lens, which I think we can all benefit from. I agree. I agree 100%. I'd like to end with a couple lines from, again, we're talking about confidence. This is volume 3, January 6, 1900. Jesus states, quote, "Confidence has two arms. With one, it embraces my humanity, and it uses my humanity as a staircase in order to ascend to my divinity. With the other, it embraces the divinity and draws celestial graces in torrents in such a way that the soul remains all inundated within the divine being. When the soul is confident, she is certain to obtain what she asks for." I mean, we have everything we need. And, you don't even need us. You don't need us. I mean, we just have fun coming together. I think it's nice. I think we encourage each other, but we don't need this. We have everything. I think it's time to start letting Jesus and his mother, the two ultimate teachers, start teaching us.
Yeah.
Because that's where we're going to learn the most. But we're very thankful for all the other souls that God has given us to help us on this path. They're numerous. I think it's time. I think it's time. We have everything. No more chasing butterflies. Maureen, before we go, I'd like to just, if I could, remind everyone we have tomorrow, which is Holy Thursday, we have a special program on Radio Maria with Mother Gabriel. It actually will be Mother Gabriel and the Benedictine Daughters of Divine Will that are coming to us from Maryville, Tennessee. So that's tomorrow live on Radio Maria at 11 a.m. Just go to radiomaria.us and just click on the Listen Now button if you'd like. If you're available. I think it'll be, I mean, I always sit back. I forget sometimes I'm on the program. I'm listening to Mother. This is, I'm just, oh, I've got to say something. But it's just cool. I mean, Mother, Mother 35, 36 years with Mother Angelica of EWTN. She was actually the right-hand sister. The secretary. Remember, Luis is the secretary to the divine will. Secretary is not a frivolous job. It's an important job. In fact, the secretary in my corporate days knows more than the boss does. Trust me on that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so she was the secretary to Mother Angelica. And she was next in line. She was going to be at the helm. Divine will was more important. Mother Gabriel gave up even holy things to do what she believed is right. And I believe she made the right choice.
Wow.
I know everyone does. It's phenomenal. So she'll be with us tomorrow, every Thursday, but tomorrow will be a special, it is tomorrow, right? Tomorrow's Thursday. Tomorrow, 11 o'clock a.m. Radio Maria Day is. Anyone have any comments, complaints before we go? Hopefully no complaints. I've had enough of those. Well, at least for this week. There's always next week. Okay. Well, thanks be to God for this, for the divine will, for each other, for Maureen joining us. Because again, some of those words in the first couple of paragraphs, I couldn't even pronounce. You did a great job on that. I don't even know what that one word means.
I didn't either.
I have to look that up later. But I was like, gosh, thank God Maureen's here. Imagine me, I would have mumbled and jumbled that. Oh my goodness. That would have been embarrassing. Okay, so tomorrow, everyone, if you can, Radio Maria, 11 a.m. Thanks be to God.
Bye, everybody. Everyone. Bye, Peter.
Bye, Maureen. Love you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.